and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2222, four deuces, right?
Yes.
We have the dash one amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and also the hand and gross version of the bill that Ryan did, so you can see where the changes appear in the bill. And this is the bill we had a work session on last week, but the amendments weren't ready. And today they are. This is the bill that would authorize the department to immediately suspend the license of a fuel dealer that fails to comply with fuel tax laws. And the issue was notice to dealers, sellers of fuel to those dealers, and how that notice would be provided. This allows it to be determined by rule, but gives some leeway to the sellers of fuel to be able to make sure that the recovery first tries to come from the vending dealer, and then there's also a three-day grace period.
Thank you, Janet. The chair will move the adoption of the dash one amendments to 2222. Is there any discussion? Have you had a chance to look at them, Mitch?
Yes.
You're fine on them?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have.
Okay. Was there anyone signed up for testimony?
No.
Everybody's happy? Nod of heads. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
They're happy,
aren't they?
Wow.
Is there? Oh, there's a breakthrough.
Hearing no objection, the dash one are adopted. Do I have a motion?
I move 2222 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves House Bill 2222 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Anybody?
Is this one we would want to put on a consent calendar?
Yeah,
or
I think so.
Well, if it's unanimous on it.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? Ryan, you call the roll, please.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carried. Now we need a motion to put it on the consent calendar.
I move we put it on the consent calendar.
It's moved
2222-1.
2222-1 be placed upon the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none. So done. Okay, where are we at?
Boy, we mean business. Hey.
I lost my agenda now, though. I'm going to have to borrow John. That is mine.
I got two.
Okay, well, let's see. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2540. And Janet, can you give us a rundown on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2540 would require an applicant for a vehicle title to pay title fees for previous transfers of the vehicle for which title transfers were not completed. The bill exempts transfers by vehicle dealers and specifies an effective date of July 1st, 2004.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we've just received some of the fiscal information. We're making copies, so we'll pass that out when it comes. And I think the representatives from the department and the Dealers Association are here. Thank you.
Monty, would you come forward, please?
Okay.
Good morning, Monty.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Monty King. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. We have been talking about this in the association for a couple of years. It's been through our legislative committee. It was discussed at length at our annual meeting last year. Basically, is it a policy decision? Should people pay for a title transfer when they obtain a vehicle? There should be a rule. There is a rule that everybody who owns a car should have a title correctly in their name. But that's not what's happening. There's lots of reasons why people don't want a title vehicles in their name. No insurance, no driver's license, deadbeat dads, illegal aliens, criminals on the run, drunk drivers, and underage kids, just to name a few. I can also add in illegal vehicle dealers. They don't want to be there. We believe that everybody should pay their fair share of the road costs, and that $13 of every title transaction go to pay for roads and bridges. And maybe that's going to go up this time. Just because somebody transfers one someplace doesn't mean they shouldn't pay their fair share. So we believe this is worth millions. If there is a fiscal impact, maybe should I go to Ways and Means and let them figure out how they can spend the money this is going to bring in? We believe it's going to bring in a lot of money because we see these things come through the dealerships with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different transfers of interest with no titling in between. And we think there's a lot more of it out there than anybody really knows. We will never know how much money this will bring in unless we actually do it. So that would be a legislative policy decision whether you want to do it. The dealers know that we're going to get hit with this and that we're going to be paying some of these things. But the vote at our association on the board of directors and the whole of the annual meetings with board of directors and members was unanimous in support of the concept of everybody ought to pay their fair share. That's basically what it's about. It's about fairness, about people paying their fair share. There might be a couple technical problems, and perhaps if you don't want to go this direction at this point, maybe we ought to take a look at this over the interim, see how much money there is. We don't believe just increasing title fees or just increasing registration fees, though, is the answer to getting more money. We believe fairness has to be part of that aspect. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions, Lonnie?
I do.
Representative Greenland.
Fairness is a great idea. You'd have no problem if we struck subsection 2 out of section 2 out of it so that dealers were also responsible for this along with all the rest of us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlake, at this point, a dealer does not have to pay for a title transfer when they take a vehicle in and then sell it already. That's for all vehicles. Perhaps, in fact, that section might need to be increased in size so that, when a person pays a vehicle off and they get the title back from the bank, that they not have to pay it at that point. If you're going to make that kind of a change, that will cost the dealerships in the state of Oregon. Let's see, there's 1.3 million title transfers somewhere in that area. I think 170,000 are new cars. So let's go down to, 1.1 million. I would say about half of those are probably used car transfers by dealers. So you're talking about 550,000 transactions at $30 each as an increase in the dealer costs. Plus, you would also have to add in all of the wholesale transfers from dealer to dealer to dealer to dealer, which could increase that perhaps to 1 million. All of those costs, of course, would be transferred in the end to the consumers. The dealers aren't really going to pay that kind of an increase, but you're talking, it could be close to 1 million. So you're talking maybe perhaps a $30 million increase per year in dealer costs. I don't know if that's exactly where you want to go.
May I follow up?
Certainly.
Well, I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing. Your proposal here is that if I buy a car and 5 people have transferred the title, I now pay for those 5 transfers. But if a dealer buys a car, the dealer doesn't pay for those 5 transfers. So let's say we don't change the plan that the first purchase of a... I mean, a dealer buys a car, the dealer doesn't have to pay for that transfer, but I'm talking about your fairness thing here now. A dealer and I buys a car, and there are five transfers that have been made. The dealer knows that by looking at it. Why wouldn't you include the dealer in paying for those five past transfers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlee, I think we have, and that was the intent of it, that the dealer would have to pay for those. If there were four private party transactions previous to the time the dealer got it, the dealer would be responsible for those private party transactions, private party, private party, private party. But at the time the dealer takes it in, when the dealer buys the vehicle as a trade-in, basically every trade-in is actually a purchase of a vehicle, or from another wholesaler, that those transactions are not in there, but there was no intent that a dealer could take in something that had five previous transfers where they should have been a title paid, and the dealer would be escaped from those. The dealer, in our estimation of the bill, is responsible for those also, so there was no intent to do. And I can see why you might see that in there. You'd have to look at legislative counsel to say that there was no intent that the dealer would not be responsible for those private party transfers.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I can ask Janet. I mean, doesn't it say that in subsection 2 of section 2?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Greenlee, I'm reading lines 10 and 11 to exempt dealers from the new provisions, and they're already exempt from having to transfer title on vehicles that they buy and sell.
So as it's written now, it would exempt dealers from the new section.
That's my understanding.
Representative Mabry.
I don't know that I can quote it, but it's like, you know, if you confiscate a gun, only crooks will have guns. And that sparks my comment here. You know, if the drunks and deadbeats and criminals, illegal aliens are going to do this, what makes you think they're going to pay for a title transfer fee and not just... And run it until the license expires or it's a piece of junk and then abandon it. What confidence do we have that this is going to change anything?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liberty, we don't know how much it will change. We do know that some of those people are going to continue doing what they've been doing, which is trying to escape any notice whatsoever. We understand that. That's already a situation. But as this rule comes into effect, and as there's education over the next year and a half, because it wouldn't take effect until July 1st, 2004, there would be a lot of education. It's really, in Oregon, up to the seller to pay attention to this process, to make sure they put in the 6890 so that they're not held responsible for a subsequent purchaser. And then and then on the other side of that person, there would also be the relationship of, I'm buying this vehicle. Here's a couple transfers that haven't been paid for. Gee, I'm going to negotiate those out of the price, or I'm going to get the money from the person I'm buying it for. As long as there's only one bad guy in that middle area, there's going to be a lot more responsibility among the public. We believe the public really wants everybody to title their vehicles in their own name. I guess in the dealer association believes that most people, most of the time, will do what's right. So as long as we got the sellers doing the right thing and the buyers doing the right thing on the ends, those people in the middle are going to be a smaller, much smaller portion than what we have now. The public policy, the financial arrangements can be, we think, quite good for cities and counties and state roads. And that's what, then there's the fairness thing of everybody paying their fair share, I would hope would be very important to everybody in the state.
Thank you, Matt.
Help me, Monty, so I can understand. When you buy a vehicle and you get a title and then you say you're licensed for 2 years, and you sell the vehicle to someone else, They can run it on without changing that title. Then they can run it for the 2 years then, or they may sell it to another person, and the title never has to change. There must be a sign-off on there someplace on the back of the title.
Mr. Chairman, a title is forever. There is no registration. Registration is for 2 years. But a title, when you buy a vehicle, you only have to title it once. If you own that car for 15 years, you're done for the whole 15 years. It's only when you sell the vehicle that it has to be retitled. Now, it has to be re-registered each time, and that's where the majority of the money for the state comes in, is re-registration every 2 years. But titling is only once. The process that we see right now is Representative Gilman would have ownership of a car. He's on the title. He sells it, signs his name off to Representative Beyer. She puts her name on it, and she drives it for a while because the plates are still good, and then sells it to you, Mr. Chairman, just by signing off. Now, each one of you, Representative Beyer didn't pay her fee, and she's liable for a $50 fine if she doesn't do that within 30 days of the date of ownership. But if she sells it to you, say, 90 days later, and then you go into DMV and you actually title it, DMV does not ask for the $30 that should have been paid for Representative Buyers, and does not ask for the $50 fine for not titling it within 30 days. So the state is now lost, and we're not asking that fines or anything be done, just that every transaction be paid for along the line of the ownership. Our understanding of the $13 increase last session was that was to go to pay for roads and bridges, and that money then paid for, a $400 million bond to put on the roads. Now, maybe this isn't a big part of that, but it certainly is part of the fairness. The titles are forever until the next transfer. We see these things come in with four, five, six of them at a time. We really believe that once everybody knows, when you buy a vehicle, if there's going to be more than one transfer back there, you probably ought to get the money for it or negotiate it out of the price.
And so to get a new license, though, to relicense it after 2 years, the title doesn't necessarily have to have been transferred. It can be just, and they just re-registered under the prior owner? And is that?
Mr. Chairman, if there is a transfer of interest, then the title needs to be changed. If the registration is still valid, the registration is converted to the new titled owner. And perhaps maybe you ought to look at that process and see if that's someplace the state wants to go. We're not going to go there ourselves. But basically that registration money, registrations are now for 4 years on many cars. And I just bought my wife one for Christmas. It's 4-year registration. Now, if I sell that next year, it's going to have to be retitled to the new owner, correct? But the registration continues for 3 more years of valid registration. I can take those plates off my car and put them on the next car I buy. Or I can leave the plates on and lose the money, and the person who buys the vehicle will then gain the money that was paid for the registration.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dingfeld.
I have a follow-up question to what Representative Mabry had brought up. I guess I'm trying to figure out what's fair here. And the question I have is whether it is fair to ask the person who purchases the car last to pay for the past sins, so to speak, and negligence of the former owners. And if I'm understanding right, and listening to your testimony, I'm just wondering, this is an issue of enforcement, and obviously I think we're going to have DMV come up. If it's an issue of enforcement rather than, asking the person who's purchasing the car most recently to pay for the past title transfers, do you have any comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, yes, it is a question of fairness. It's a question of responsibility of each owner of a vehicle to pay their fair share of the road system. we know that there's a few people out there who don't want to pay their shares. Once everybody knows about this, we think it is going to be fair. It is fair that everybody pays their fair share. Is it fair that some people avoid their fair share by using the DMV system of title and registration to their own advantage to avoid paying their fair share? The association has looked at the fairness issue. We believe this is fair for everybody, and we're willing to take our hits on it and would hope that everybody else in the state who is doing all the right stuff, and a great far majority of everybody in the state does title whenever they buy their vehicle. So really what we're talking about is those people who are trying to use the current system to their own financial advantage by not titling their vehicles. We believe this is fair as opposed to what's currently going on with the rest of us who are doing the right stuff are having to pay more because the other ones aren't.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. Yeah, I am having a hard time understanding why it would be fair to ask the latest owner to pay for all of the, like I said, previous owner's lack of or negligence. You know, that's what it is, basically. And obviously you said that they get a fine, supposedly, if they don't pay for that title transfer. So I think I need to hear... If we can hear some suggestions possibly from DMV, I'd be interested to hear if there's some other way to approach this, because I just don't think that this approach that you're proposing is fair in that you're putting the burden on the most recent owner.
Mr. Chairman,
I don't have to respond to that. I'm just saying that's my comment about what I'm hearing, unless I'm misunderstanding. I'm just trying to figure out how you think that it's fair to ask the person who purchased the car last to pay for all the previous owner's negligence.
Mr. Chairman, Representative...
I'm not saying that it shouldn't be paid for by somebody. I'm just saying I don't think it's fair to ask the most recent person to pay that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, we believe that the owner of a vehicle is responsible for that vehicle when they buy it. They know that there are previous owners when they're buying it. They know that there are previous owners who have not paid their lawful and required amounts for titling. And as long as they pay the slightest bit of attention, there's no reason why they should have to pay what went on before. It's really, to us, a policy decision of, are you going to get the money that's supposed to have been paid, or are you not going to get the money? And how does that influence all the other things that go along with this, as in uninsured motorists on the highway? Should there be a record of ownership with each transfer? There's a lot more involved here than just the fairness of helping somebody out who didn't title it on purpose. We do not believe that people do not title vehicles because they're trying to save $30. We believe people aren't titling them because they don't want anybody to know they have the car. So, yeah, there's probably a few people that can't afford the title fee, but we don't believe that's the majority of them. So who is helped out by the lack of enforcement or the lack of rules in the situation? Certainly it's not the highways. The cities and counties and everybody who could probably use the funding. Certainly it's not the good people who are already doing it. Who is being helped by the lack of enforcement here? And that's certainly the question, is the lack of enforcement. But this is a legislative policy decision of how are we going to enforce people titling. So, yes, there's a question of fairness. Who's being unfair to, though?
Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Monty, there's a danger that listening to your testimony and your bills is going to sour me on the goodness of human nature. But I also, while my naivete is challenged, I'd like my logic not to be challenged. And the second paragraph of your, actually the opening paragraph of your testimony, says, why do the honest people always have to pay their fair share and the people who want to hide their ownership of cars and trucks don't have to pay? That's what this bill is about. But what I understand your bill to say is anybody who's dishonest and wants to hide it will continue to be dishonest and want to hide it. The first person that will be penalized is the first honest person who says, well, I'm supposed to title my car and I want to title my car. So if this is what this bill is about, it's to get the dishonest people to pay their share, what it seems to me it does is exactly the opposite. It gets the first honest person who decides to title their car according to the rules and forces them to essentially pay more than they would otherwise have to pay. Do you read the logic the same as that, or am I missing something in your thinking?
Representative Brown, Representative Greenlee, that is the ultimate question. You've come right down to it. What is the benefit? We believe maybe you're right.
No, that's not the question.
And
I asked the question, who pays?
We believe...
You make the dishonest people pay, and what I think you do is make the honest people pay. That's the question, not who benefits. Who pays?
Representative Brown, Representative Greenlee, we believe the honest people are already paying. They're already doing it. We believe that everybody in Oregon wants to buy vehicles that are titled in the previous owner's name. They don't want to buy vehicles that are one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. It's really a question first. We don't believe that people who are honest are going to be paying any more than they already were. For a couple months, you're going to see some problems. And for a couple months, you're going to see dealers paying a lot more money because they're going to take this into account when they're bringing these vehicles in. But once it gets going, you're not going to see vehicles coming in with 6, 7, 8 different assignments. You're just going to see one right after from the registered owner to the title owner. There's another change that's supposed to be happening, and we hope is going to happen, is the limitation of the endorsements on the back of a title to one endorsement, one transfer on the back of a title. Right now, there are 3 endorsements on the back of a title. 2 of them are only supposed to be used by vehicle dealers, but we see consumers doing them, bang, 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 and then after that, they don't even use that anymore. They just write out a bill of sale, and then you can have 3 endorsements on there, and then a bill of sale, then a bill of sale, then a bill of sale. You don't even need to do it on the title. That's for vehicles 10 years and older. For vehicles 9 years and newer, there does have to be a secure odometer statement, which can be done on a secure odometer reassignment, or it can be done on a secure power of attorney for that mileage that is on a vehicle 9 years or newer. But once we get the new titles, which I've been assured is going to happen, and there's no law or rule, by the way, that says you have to have 3 endorsements, 2 endorsements, or 1 endorsement on the actual title. But once we get to the one endorsement on the title, on the back of it, you're going to see more and more people doing the title transfers because there's not going to be those additional chances on there. They're not going to have the right paperwork. So we think that's going to help also. There's a number of problems, and then there's a number of issues, and we've been trying to work on the broad scale of it. This is one element of it. It's a policy decision. And like I said before, if you're not going to do it now, then maybe we ought to take a look at it over the interim.
Representative Byer.
Well, and I don't want to keep beating this issue. I also had some concerns about this being a disincentive to register your vehicle as opposed to a way of catching all those dishonest people. And that's what we all want to do, along with you, is catch the dishonest people. The other part of my question you somewhat answered pretty much with Representative Greenlee was, in your discussions, did you discuss other ways that you could get at this problem besides this, which penalizes the honest people, really? So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Monty, to use the example that you set up with Representative Gilman and Byer, he has a car, transfers it to her, or sells it to her. She sells it to me. I would know that she didn't pay then. Am I right there? And so that it would be my choice to say, hey, look, you know, you haven't followed the law. I'm going to get nailed for $30 or $40, so I'm going to take some off of the car deal. Do I have that choice then to buy that car and I know what's going on? Or can buyers slip it by
a dummy like me, which is probably easy to do. In fact, it's an automatic. It's the choice of the buyer. If they know the past history of the car, whether they want to get involved in this thing and want to get stuck by it. Am I right there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zahner, you are exactly right. You will see, hopefully, all of the transfers of interest previous to you. Now, the only way you will not see those multiple transfers is if one seller didn't write who bought it down on their endorsements, right? So if Representative Gilman doesn't say who he sold the vehicle to on the paperwork, then Representative Beyer could have just sold it to you, and it's going to look like you bought it from Representative Gilman.
Okay.
That's not... I don't think the greatest majority of the public would do what I just said Representative Gilman might have done in the example. However, I do know a former Speaker of the House who did exactly that, and 9 months later the car ended up in Seattle along the highway, and he got a tow bill. But because he didn't submit a 6890 to who he sold it to, and he didn't put down on the title who he sold it to, so that car is just zooming out there with basically no record whatsoever. So as long as we do what we're supposed to do, and you put who you sold it to, you put who you sold it to, and when you're buying this now, you can see that Representative Beyer, in the example, did not title it. You now know that there's an extra one there, and you can absolutely figure that out and know that there's another $30 due. Work it out between you and the seller.
I don't believe Representative Beyer got her question answered, did you?
Well, I mean, you did talk a little bit with Representative Greenlick about some other things they talked about. I guess the question is, are some of these bills in the process now to get at this, or are they just ideas?
Chairman Brown, Representative Beyer, we do have several bills in. There are, to us, two things that you could really do to solve a lot of this in one place. Well, let me just say one. Well, I'll go to.
Make up your mind.
You can require that the plate go with the owner, which is the case in most states. That's going to take care of a lot of this. Or you can require that the seller submit the sale documents, which is done in a lot of states also. Either way, the state always knows pretty much who's going to have the vehicle, because if you're taking your plate with you, they don't have a plate, do they? So they're going to have to go register and title it in their own name to get another plate, unless the buyer brings their plate with them. And if they bring their plate with them, now the Oregon is one of the few states that has a dual system where you can leave your plate or you can take it with you. It's kind of confusing. I mean, how many tens of thousands of custom plates are there? But you can actually take your regular plate with you also. And I always do that now, whenever I can, because especially with a four-year registration, and if you're going to double your registration fees, and it's going to go to $60 for 2 years, you can believe that the public is going to want to take those plates with them. In Arkansas, it's $900 for 2 years? And then they got sales tax, and, I mean, that's why plates in other states go with the owner. Our system has allowed all of this non-payment stuff. It's a whole systemic problem. It's not just one thing. So we do have those bills in. I don't think they're going to get...
At least Representative Beyer sold you her lousy car.
Just a quick follow-up. So you're saying maybe we should raise our registration fee to about $900, and then we can... people will take care of the problem, right?
Representative Brown, Representative Beyer... We actually believe the reason the people of Oregon will not ever give a higher registration fee is because they don't trust their safety on the highway, and they don't trust that people are on the highway with vehicles titled and registered and insured are on the highway coming at them. We don't believe that they're going to give you more money through gas tax, higher registration fees, without fixing some of these systemic problems. When you got 13% of all the accidents in Oregon that involved uninsured motorists, you were talking just physical damage caused, what, a couple hundred million? And that's not, that's without the body count, the loss of income, and everything else. You, we need to cut that 13% down, and this is part of it. But it's, you got a whole bunch of parts to get there.
Thank you, Monty, for your testimony on this. And could I have Kelly Taylor please come up and talk to us now? Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kelly Tater with the Department of Transportation. I'd like to clarify a few things that have been said, just to kind of try to answer some of the questions. Monty's right. When there's a transfer of interest, you are supposed to apply for a new title within 30 days. And he's right that there are penalties that you would pay in addition to that should you submit it after the 30 or 60th day. We found through the years since you've put that penalty on there that that penalty doesn't really work very well because a lot of people simply just alter the dates and we don't know that on the sale dates. So people get around paying penalties. We believe that people will get around paying this penalty. You're right. It is the first honest person that shows up with the title that's going to pay the sins, the errors of all the past folks that didn't pay their title fees. But there are reasons why people don't necessarily turn in titles, too, that don't have anything to do with being criminals or anything. For example, there can be a couple who owns a car. They took out a loan on a car. Both their names are on it, and they get a divorce. And one of them, through the divorce proceedings, is awarded the car. The lender typically will not take that other person's name off the car because they're still on the loan. And so I get a divorce. I get the car. A few years later, the loan's paid off. What, I'm supposed to pay the $30 that I couldn't pay at the time I got my divorce because the lender wouldn't give up the title in order to take my ex-husband's name off of it, and then I pay another my $30? I mean, there are things that will happen that will catch people that weren't trying to get away with anything. They couldn't turn the title in. There are people who pay off a loan. You're the only one on the car. You pay off a loan. You get the title back from the lender, and you put in your safety deposit box because you now have a signed-off title, and you don't realize that you should or be turning that title in to take off that transfer of interest, because that is a transfer of interest. Somebody no longer has an interest in that vehicle. We do see a title with bills of sales turned in, and we go through the process of just making sure that all the links are there. But now what this bill will do is not only make sure the links are there, but look for any seller notices that we've gotten to try to see if that person's, you know, what they did and what time limit and when they sold it and who they sold it to. I mean, this does create quite a bit of work for us to try to go back and collect those fees to the tune of about 12 additional positions. Now, that may be covered by the revenue. He's right. This probably would increase revenue. But we believe that the folks that are typically doing the multiple bills of sale and sales over and over and over again are those low-value vehicles. Not the high-value vehicles. People who have high-value vehicles want the title in their name. So we think that this will just perpetuate the problem of those people avoiding putting the titles in their name because they're not going to want to pay those additional fees. They've already got a low-value vehicle. So they're going to do one of a couple things. They're either going to falsify bills of sale to reduce the number of links in there, or they're going to sell that vehicle to an unsuspecting buyer. Representative Zahner said he might be the unsuspecting buyer. Or they're going to abandon the car because, again, it's low value. But one thing I want you to know is a title may be forever, but you're right, Representative Brown. The registration's good for 2 years. And if you want to renew that plate, you're going to have to put the title in your name. So there is an impetus there for the person to come in and title it. But we've already heard a lot of testimony says people don't do that because, why? These are low-value cars. So they run them until the plates are expired, and they don't bother to title their car. They let them go. There was a law many years ago on recreational vehicles that required the buyer who showed up to put the title in their name to catch up past registration fees. And let me tell you, that was not a popular law. And no matter how long that law was on the books, people did not become educated. So Monty's kind of at both ends of the spectrum. On one end, he's skeptical that people will follow are following the law. On the other end, he's thinking they're all going to become educated in a few months. Well, I'm here to tell you, with the past registration law that was on the books for many years, people did not become educated. But they did become incensed when they were at the DMV office and being told they had to pass up, or had to catch up all the past registration fees that the previous owners had let lapse. And they did know that those plates were expired because the plates on the vehicle they bought were expired. But they never did become educated about the fact that they were going to pay those extra fees. That law was repealed. We believe that this bill is additional workload to try to track all of that, to try to figure it out. Will it create some new revenue? Yes. Is this the way to create new revenue? I'll leave that up to you.
Thank you, Kelly. And so what you're saying and what I read in your testimony is that here all of my life, whenever I paid off my car, I took the title down, and like you said, I put it in the safety deposit box, and technically I should have taken that to DMV and removed the lien holder on that.
Technically, that is a transfer of interest, correct.
Oh,
somebody
okay.
has removed themselves from that title.
I always left it. You know, I never let a title stay there very long. As soon as I get one, I want to run out and buy a new car then trade it in. So then,
The only time that a security interest change doesn't have to go through a title transfer is if the security interest holder themselves go through a merger or a name change or something like that. You know, bank buyouts and things like that. Those titles don't have to be turned in because technically that is the same company that's just merged with another one.
Okay. Representative Greenland.
Morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Do you have the fiscal analysis in front of you?
Yes.
There's a statement that I thought is curious.
I don't have the same one you do, so it may be slightly varied.
Ryan just handed it.
Oh, you did. Thank you, Ryan. Go ahead.
It says, according to Driver and Motor Vehicle Services staff, title transfer applications received at the office typically have two interim transfers without a title. Those received through the mail typically have three without a title. And applications for heavy vehicles typically have one. I mean, does that mean, by typically, does that mean I'm not the usual person? I just send in my title fee? I mean, is it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlake, it's my understanding that what we did try to put this fiscal together was to try to do some sampling, but just also some gut reactions of what we see. So that's what's down here, is kind of what we do see. Now, Monty is correct. We are changing the title application, the back of it, to reduce the number of spots for people to sign on. But unless you all outlaw bills of sale, that's not going to really change anything. People could still sell cars with bills of sale, collecting those up and then turning them in, which is what's happening.
It typically means usually.
Typically means routinely.
Sure.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlake, I don't know that we didn't write this, so it may be a translation of what they saw. What we're saying is we do routinely see that in business. It is not unusual to see a bill of sale or something besides just a perfect title transfer. Now, one thing that's been discussed in the past is to outlaw bills of sale, to outlaw anything but title in hand, and to require that at dealerships too, to say, you know what, you want to sell a vehicle, you better have the title. So that may mean you go to sell that car, you've advertised it, and I go out to Representative Gilman's home and I look at that car and I want to buy it, and he's scrambling looking through the house and he can't find that title. He couldn't sell it to me till he got the title. Okay? And if Representative Beyer wants to buy it, she's got to have a title in her name before she can, or if she wants to sell it, she's got to have a title in her name before she can sell it to Janet. I mean, you could go to that. Now, what that means is people will definitely apply for more titles if the word gets out. It'll also mean people will show up at the DMV office saying, hi, I want to do this, and we say, guess what, we can't take all that. You got to track down all those people and get titles, you know, get the owner we have on record to sign off to you. And they say, well, I don't even know who that person is. I don't even know that person. I bought it three times. I'm just saying, I think we're being a little generous with what the public will be absorbing in their education.
Kelly, you know, this transferring ownership without, and then the people avoiding the fee of retitling a vehicle, I see is a, you know, is a problem, and there is a matter of fairness. How do we get at it?
Well, Mr. Chair, the states do it all differently, and there is no perfect system. The states that there aren't most states that do plates coming off the car going with the owner. It is about half, and there's problems in both systems. And we have been talking to the states that do it the other way. Now, to change our system in Oregon, I mean, they built their systems that way. That's how they started out their DMVs. For us to change to the plates go with the seller is a huge, huge change. I mean, that just turns the whole system on its head. I mean, that's some megabucks to be spending to do that. And we're not sure. It's not a flawless system. It'll have its problems, too. So we don't have, like the IBM commercials, the magic pixie dust that will solve this. But I don't think that charging someone for all the past transactions is going to make them run into a DMV in order to change the title. It'll collect money for those that were willing to do it, but it's not going to make people that don't want to put the title in their name put the title in their name.
Would you see what kind of problems would you run into if you said you had to transfer ownership of a vehicle by a title and the bill of sale didn't get the job done?
Well, I think that there would be some stalled sales. I know, it would be an increase of transactions for us, but there'd be at least the fees coming in to pay for it. I mean, you have to understand, when we get a title transaction in now that has three bills of sale, we're not doing additional work to put the record in and out of those people's names. We're doing just one transaction. We're making sure the links are there, but we're only doing one. To do a title in hand, to say that you have to have a title, it'll mean more in transactions, but the fee does cover our cost of doing that. Don't know how many more bodies we'd need, because I don't know whether we could absorb that workload. It certainly would pay for it. It's just whether all, we have the positions to do it.
Yeah. Other questions? Representative Zahner.
Follow up on the chair's question. How about insurance? If we did it this way, where you had to transfer that title, would we get a better lock on making sure people have insurance on their car before they're able to get out the door?
Mr. Chair and Members' Honor,
that's a concern to me, because that's a very big expense. I know you have a more expense in paperwork, but the expense right. that we as taxpayers and our state pays for people that are hitting other people that don't have insurance and are violating the law is far more than your cost, in my opinion.
Mr. Chair and Representative Honor, more title transactions does not mean more insurance coverage, I'm sorry to say. Because you can certify to me that when you apply that you have insurance. You can even show me an insurance card that was issued to you by your insurance company. That does not mean it's still in effect. Okay? You could have gotten that card and canceled it and it looked perfectly valid to us. And if we were to try to call up insurance companies prior to titling on 1.3 million titles that we do, you can imagine what the workload of that would try to be. So you show us that you have insurance. You tell us you have insurance. Okay? That doesn't mean you really have insurance. Now, what is on our records, the system that you all built starting back in 93 was to have insurance companies electronically hooked up with DMV so that each vehicle record has a spot on it that tells law enforcement, along with my name and address and the make and model of the car, whether or not insurance is on file. And as policies are issued, the insurance companies transmit that information to us, and we update the record with insurance on file. And as policies are canceled, after I got that card, and then I call up my insurance agent, cancel it, and get a refund, the insurance agent or the insurance company sends an electronic notification to DMV saying insurance not on file. And that's how law enforcement will know, as cars are driving around and you all gave them the right for probable cause to make a stop to check further, if they see cars and they run the plate and they're thinking, there's no insurance on file, I should check that out a little further. They have the right to do that. That's the system you put in place, because there is no system that ensures you will keep that insurance. You can cancel it. Even if you have it the moment you apply for title, you can cancel it the very next day. Even if I made that phone call to State Farm to prove you had it on that Dodge before I titled it, you can cancel it the very next day. You see the problem? That's the issue.
Answer your question.
One follow-up. Would it help stem the illegals for being able to get to buy the car? Or, I mean, does the insurance company have more strict rules when they sell insurance? Do they have to be a U.S. citizen to buy insurance? I don't know. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Honor, I don't know. You'd have to ask one of the representatives of the insurance agents. Yeah. I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlee.
Kelly, I'd like to ask your impression. I'm sure you don't have any real data. My suspicion is it's not going to be the person that buys Representative Zahner's $100,000 Bentley that's not going to register.
I can't even spell
it's
that.
Gonna,
what do you think?
It's going to be the person that buys Representative Mabry's 83 Pontiac. I have a sense this will disproportionately penalize the poorer people.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, that's what we see. I mean, we do know that the low-value cars do change hands. I mean, even Mr. King has testified to that. That is one of the problems he's trying to get at. I don't blame him. But you're right. It is the folks that have the lower-value cars that probably have had cars that have changed hands more often than the higher-value cars. And again, like I said, with a higher-value car, you know you go, you probably even have a loan on it, so the lender's making sure there's a title in your name with their name on it, too. But in the higher value cars, people tend to go ahead and get the title because they want to protect themselves. So you're right. Yes, Mr. Representative Greenlee, you're right.
Any other question? We got them all answered, Kelly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As usual.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2540. And open a public hearing on 2541. And Janet, can you
give us a rundown on that? House Bill 2541 would allow vehicle dealers to issue temporary registration permits that carry dealer advertising and to charge fees for the permits. It would allow a dealers association to furnish the permits to dealers. Currently, the dealers can issue temporary registration permits, but the forms themselves come from DMV. Finally, it would allow the permit to be placed on the rear of a vehicle on or near the area normally occupied by the license plate. You should have at your place today two potential amendments. The Dash 1 amendment would delete the dealer's authority to charge a fee. And the Dash 2 amendments would limit the dealer's ability to charge a fee to $2. And these are fees in addition to what the registration fee for the vehicle is.
Thank you, Janet. Monty, please come up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Monty King, Executive Director, Oregon Independent Auto Dealers. And I have also, with the chairman's indulgence, I brought up Chris Davis, who is a salesperson who has worked both in Arizona and now in Oregon, been in Oregon for a while, I think, who has experience with this matter. We do have some amendments that have been drafted, and we'd really like to try this out. We believe it's a kind of a neat deal. First place anybody looks is on the rear of the car anyway in the plate area. So we don't see a problem with having temporary registrations at that location because that's where everybody looks anyway. If it really comes down to whether we have dealer advertising or not, then we'll get rid of that and we'll look at that maybe in a couple years and see if we can add it on, but there's room there. What we're saying is we want to pay for them if we can do that, but we'll go a couple years without the advertising to help pay for it if that's what it takes to get this done. We believe the consumers want this done. I've talked to I don't know how many people. I've never heard one person ever say, gee, I really like that one up on the back window where it leaves the residue that I got to scrape off and maybe mess up my rear defogger. I've never met anybody with a convertible who said, gee, I really like it on the back window where it folds down and I get stopped by the cop. Or I really like the one on the front window where I get stopped by the officer, you know, because they can't see it on the back. There's information on the temporary registration on the back of it that probably shouldn't be on there anyway. We ought to keep that in the glove compartment. As far as it being outside, we have ways of doing that where you can get it on there, and if you try and take it off, it'll rip it to shreds. So the security issue is not a problem with us. There's there's just a lot of people who would rather have them on the back of the car than inside that window, leaving all that residue. It's certainly easy for the dealers. It's easier for the public. I don't know anybody out here in the real world who doesn't like that. And the way we've written the bill is DMV can make sure it's the way they like it before we do it that way. And we're willing to pay for them however we do that.
Monty, this would be like a bumper sticker that would go in where the license plate normally goes on a car. Is that what you're saying? Where it'd be located on the rear of the car?
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly correct. It could be the size of a license plate. It could be a little smaller. We could have it in vinyl form where you put the numbers on it. I mean, there's so many variations. I'd like to maybe have Chris talk about his experience in Arizona. Arizona went through a couple phases of it. They charge it every time to every customer. He can tell you how much it is, but their registrations are so much farther beyond ours. I mean, the money really isn't a consideration. This is having those things where people can see them and where they don't leave residues and they don't help destroy defoggers and stuff. It's about what people want, I guess.
Chris,
good morning, everybody.
I ask you to give your name and address for the record. And
my name is Christopher Davis, and I live at 555 Olney Street, Almsville, Oregon, 97325.
Okay.
And I worked in Arizona about 4 years ago. And I think it was in 1997 they implemented the license plate, which the dealer administers to the person that buys the car, and that is registered at DMV. And the bonus is for really law enforcement, because when they see a plate on the back, they can dial it into their computer and find out who is the owner of the car. And the way the system is now, you can alter the sticker in the back window. The negative is for Representative Zahner, who's on his way to a meeting, and the sticker falls out of the window. An officer pulls up behind him and cannot see that. He's going to pull him over. He's not a criminal. He's just, the sticker fell out. Excuse me. That's the bonus for having the plate on the back. We didn't have advertising. We just had, it was actual, a real plate, had numbers, and that is registered at DMV in their computer, which goes to law enforcement.
Money, you're wanting advertising on this? What would it be like, one of those license plate frame that every dealer puts on your vehicle?
Mr. Chairman, that would be the way the bill is written. The DMV would have to prove how the advertising was put on there. I just envision it as a strip on the right or a strip on the left with something about the dealer. If you take the actual physical size of a temporary registration, they're only about this big, but your plate area is about this big. So there is some room there. And if it's standard of where the ad advertising would be, of course, I think everybody on the committee knows you got to pay for it somehow. And if we can have a little bit of advertising on there, I mean, we're only talking 50 cents, 25, 50 cents to actually put the thing together and have it onto the car. So, you know, if we can get some money out of it to pay for it, but even without that, we'd still like to do this. As a benefit for our customers, because the public wants this. They want it back there. It's the question of what will allow the industry to do for their customers in large respect.
My experience has been, Monty, that whenever I bought a car, the dealer made sure that his license plate frame was on that vehicle when I left. And then when I take it to another dealer to have them service it or something, do some work on the car, they change the frame again. So I got a different one on there.
Mr. Chairman, you're right. I've been to like some, I know probably 1,500 dealers, and I've actually gone in there when I was with Auto Trader or even now, and I'll go in there visit them a while. I'll come out and a couple of days later figure out, hey, they changed the license plate covers on me, but they can do that to me because I don't worry about it. I don't see many dealers doing that. I always take those off myself because I know too many dealers Because that dealer's going, well, why'd you buy it from him? Because you could have got a better deal with me, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some advertising there. The one of the neat things about what Arizona's doing now is when they make it out, then there's a clear vinyl cover that goes onto it, and there's no way you can change those letters. That the changing of the letters of the numbers has been a very big deal as far as dealer inspections, and when those books are returned to DMV, they're looking at all those things. Usually it's the person buying the car that changes those. They make the 3 into an 8 so they can drive it longer, whatever. Anytime a dealer makes any mistakes on a temporary registration or temporary permit, they have to void the permit, and they have to write a written explanation of it. It goes into their file, and then when they turn those into DMV to get more books, there has to be that note in there. So and if they don't do that, then they can get fines up to, I don't know, $500 if they don't do those things right. So we're trying to make sure the dealers aren't doing those types of things. And the having that plastic coating on the outside, maybe we need to work on this a little more with DMV. I don't know. I think with the way it's written, we'll do whatever they need to get done to allow that to happen, with or without advertising, with or without the fees. We just like to do it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Arizona, the plate itself, was it a physical plate that you screwed on, or was it like a bumper sticker that's stuck on?
An actual plate that you screw on, and you write on it, and the film goes over the top.
It's a cardboard.
And you can't write over it. It's a cardboard piece.
Okay.
And you put the plastic film over it, and that covers it for rain or whatever.
Okay. Because you could do a bumper sticker, too, and then not have to take it off. Just put the regular plate over the top of it when you get it. And then you'd also know maybe who was the prior owner. Maybe, I don't know. It might be a follow-up. I don't know.
Is there any representative?
Well, I'm trying to figure out these plates. So if you're talking about a bumper sticker, are these bumper stickers that, or whatever, that you furnish so that they could possibly not be consistent by dealer in Arizona? Are they all the same?
They're all the same. They're provided by DMV to the dealer.
Right.
Just like temporary plates now, the only difference is it's a cardboard piece and you buy a box of them.
Right. So in my estimation, somehow there would have to be some kind of an economic impact to DMV if they are going to have to redesign their plates.
The fee that they charge down there is $10 for each plate.
And that's what you charge the customer, or that's what
Correct.
DMV charges you?
DMV charges the dealer, and the dealer charges the customer, unless the customer doesn't want to pay it.
So that's a charge, additional charge to the customer either way.
Unless you make the dealer pay it, yeah.
And why would the... Sorry. Follow-up. Why would the dealer want to eat this cost?
They have no choice.
So why would you want to take it on? Sorry.
It's a benefit for everybody. No criminal can't drive the car with a bad plate on it. You can't alter the thing. Anytime an officer gets up behind you, you can just look and see who it is.
Quick follow-up. That was one of the questions I have. I mean, when you get this temporary plate, it's because you're getting a permanent plate. So what would be the advantage to you to alter dates on it if you're getting a new plate anyway? Why would you want to extend it out?
Well, if you stole the car and the plate's about to expire, the sticker's about to expire, and it's the 7th month, you need to change it, you can just alter it. You can't if it's on the back of the car and if it's got the film over the top.
Okay.
I'm
sorry.
In answer to your question about why would the dealer want to do that, if they're selling you a $40,000 car and that $10 is going to make the deal, I'm sure they'll do it.
Yeah.
They'll charge you
well, too.
And it'll be there somewhere.
Yeah,
is there any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Could I have Kelly Taylor and Kurt Curtis, please?
She looks familiar. Has she been here before?
Uh-huh.
We're convinced to do it, and she sure says no.
Good morning, Kurt.
Good morning.
you want to go first?
Go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. When we read this bill, we don't quite see some of the same provisions that others are interpreting in there. Currently, we are issuing the permits to dealers free of charge and to customers free of charge. It's you only get a temporary registration if the vehicle you're buying doesn't have the plates on it that you're going to be needing. For example, if you're buying custom plates or something like that. And when you get the real plates and you can take the permit off the car, and I've had several of them, and I have never once ruined my back window defroster. I've been able to get the sticker off and the glue with just a little bit of nail polish remover. So we're not sure we're hearing the same complaints from customers that previous testimony had. Our biggest concern is we would want the permits to stay consistent in size, shape, and color. And we believe that the best thing to do is leave them on the inside of the vehicle, because currently by law they're to be placed rear window, left side on the inside. And that protects them. That protects them from weather, but more importantly, that protects them from theft. And whether you do adhesive sticker on the back that you're trying to make foolproof that can't be peeled off and used somewhere else, or whether you're doing an actual plate like they were testifying to, if they're on the outside of the vehicle, they're going to be stolen and used. And we certainly weren't anticipating going absorbing costs that were something other than a paper form like we do today. Our fiscal does not reflect that. We were assuming that we would stay doing the permits we do today, and if they were going to do something else, they'd be doing something else through the Motor Vehicle Dealers Association. For us to start issuing plates and tracking them, this fiscal will change significantly, would be my guess, because today we do record information on the permit to help us track who it belongs to, but not through the database. It's a manual file search if a law enforcement calls us and wants to know who it belongs to or who issued it. And so for us to start doing something that's a license plate and some sort of protective shielding material and tracking it, this fiscal will change. And I don't know what that will look like, but in my head I was going, wow, that's way more than we're doing today. Basically, this bill, the way it's written, boils down to the customer, the buyer, paying to give the dealer an advertising opportunity. And frankly, the license plate frames do that today. The temporary registration is meant as a courtesy to the person to allow them to legally operate that vehicle until they get their license plates. So we're issuing them free. The bill doesn't say the person will know that they have an option, that they could choose to do a free one versus one that is a fee one or an advertised one. We would prefer the permits to stay with just the necessary information and not cluttered with additional information that isn't pertinent to the actual vehicle and its operating ability. And we're very concerned about them being on the outside of the vehicle. We just think that just opens it up for people to steal them and put them on other cars, especially if they are something like a license plate that can simply be unbolted and moved over. So anyway, Mr. Chair, that would conclude my comments.
Kelly, now when you get a new vehicle, there's no additional charge for the temporary permit you get and put up in your back window. That's
correct, Mr. Chair. That's just part of the transaction. When you pay your title and registration fee, you get that temporary registration as part of that if you need that temporary registration. There's no additional charge for that. We don't charge the dealers for that, and we don't charge the customers for that. That's just part of the transaction.
Okay, thank you. Kurt?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Curtis, and I'm a sergeant with the Oregon State Police. Concerns regarding the bill that we have, first of all, I spoke with Mr. King about a week and a half ago regarding this bill, and he tried to alleviate my fears with regards to the dealers being able to design advertising for a type of permit, and we were envisioning that you might have 2,000 different types of permits out here, different color configurations, this type of thing. And he assured me that they were looking at something that would conform to Department of Transportation standards and just have a name on it, this type of thing. We'd probably not have a problem with that type of a permit change to have the dealer have some sort of advertising line or that, but if they're going to go into a massive change of the form that officers are able to recognize from a distance, we would have some concerns there, plus the fact that with as many different variations as there may be, if they were changed drastically, people would probably find themselves stopped more often because the officer isn't able to determine if that was an actual permit or someone just with a color drawing up in the window. I mean, it could be that to that extent. In the entire time, I did a poll with one other officer listening to the prior testimony who was in the room, plus myself. In the combined years that we've got, probably right around 40 years of law enforcement, we've never come across another vehicle that has had a temporary mounted in the rear license plate area from any other state. And we've basically found those that have been issued in other states where it's been up in the window when we've made contact with the vehicle, if we've had to. So it's a nuance that I'm not familiar with to say how it would work. The permits that are issued today by ODOT have a heavy indelible ink marking, which is large letters and supposed to be large letters, which show from a distance when that temporary permit's to expire. There are people that do try to modify, especially when the older ones, when they used to be able to use an ink pen to put in the lettering and the numbers, they try to modify it at that time. But you can always tell the ones that when you stop them that they're modified. And generally, an officer is in his patrol area enough and long enough that basically, if a car goes by for 4 or 5 months and he still sees that same temporary, because people are creatures of habit and drive the same routes, and he still has the same temporary in the window, the officer's going to find some reason to stop the person to find out what's going on. And so basically, I would say the temporary permits that we're currently using are recognizable by law enforcement. They're standard with what we're seeing out on the road from other states, at least local states. And I can't see any reason for a change on it other than maybe a line of advertising if that's what the dealers would like to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Mr. Chair, would you say that at night the temporary permit is easier to see in the back window or the license, or if it was in the license plate holder? I'm just curious. I have no idea.
Chair Brown, Representative Zahner, the permit, if it was mounted in the license plate area or if it's mounted in the rear window, at this time, the permits don't have any type of reflectorized coating. So you're going to see a blob up in the window back there that says there's something up there that's going to block the vision. It's going to be square in shape up above. Down in the license plate area, I believe you'd have less chance of seeing it unless it were reflectorized and made in such a way that it would catch the headlights at that point in time. Because generally, we're going to be going down the road. We're going to check that license plate area. If it shows some sort of white or whatever, we're not going to be able to tell until we get close enough that it's a temporary down there. We know where the temporaries are supposed to be in the rear window area of the vehicle, and we can generally tell by getting close enough there that that is a temporary based on the large block lettering that they're using now for the expiration dates.
Follow-up. The reason I ask, at night when you have your lights on dim properly behind somebody, they're right on the license plate. Those lights, and they're not up in the window, and so I'm still wondering if you think you can see it in the window as well as you could see it if it was down on the, regardless of whether it was reflected, the same thing, but putting it in a different place, would the visibility at night be any better?
Chair Brown, Representative Zahner, you have a good point there about the headlights being aimed in that area, but as I say, it's not a reflectorized coating, so we're going to have to still get close enough to the vehicle to see what that is displaying down there, whether it's just a piece of cardboard with a dealership name in it or what it is, and we're going to have the same distance that we're going to have to close up if it's up in the window there. And we're basically, by looking through the window area in most cars, you're able to tell whether it's, even if it's tinted, that there's something square or rectangular in shape that's mounted up there.
One final follow. If it was reflectorized, if they had one that you could really see with the light shining on it down there, would that be better than we currently got visibility-wise at night?
Chair Brown, Representative Zahner, I would have to see it before I could say it's better than what we have, but it may be better. I mean, it would be back to a standardized plate type of shape and form. But then putting the expiration date on there, they'd have to use some sort of reflectorized ink or something to make
Thank
it stand
you,
out.
Kelly?
Mr. Chair, if I might just add something to add to that. The thing to remember about temporary registrations is they're temporary. They're really only issued until you get your plates, and we typically have about a 21-day or less turnaround on getting titles and plates out to folks. And so to go to that expense to try to do something reflectorized, et cetera, I'm not sure it would be worth the cost for the amount of time we're really going to be using these.
My only comment, Kelly, would be on a sticker, like in a bumper sticker that's reflectorized that you just peel off and you stick it on that back.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zahner, I certainly understand what you're saying. I can tell you I would much rather take two thin strips of adhesive off my back window than an entire bumper sticker off my car. I really, really dislike bumper stickers. I know a lot of people that do.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I guess I keep hearing this term bumper sticker, but what I'm envisioning is an insert that would fit where the regular license plate fits, which would be lighted, which would, our license plates now are lighted, and so I don't see where that wouldn't be more visible. And as far as theft is concerned, you're gonna steal an insert that's good for 20 or 30 days, opposed to a license plate that's good for 2 years. If you're gonna steal something, you steal a license plate. I don't see that that's a problem. I'm okay with the reaction, but I'm not following your argument.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mabry, these are issued for 60, 90 days. They're not just issued for 20 or 30. We do give them enough time in case something should happen with the paperwork, in case there should be a delay or whatever. So they are issued for longer than 20 or 30 days. We believe, and talking with police, we believe they're just flat out more secure being in the car. Why risk the theft? With the system we've got today, unless you break the window of the car to try to steal it, which they're not. But if you put them out there, to me, it just is just going to be tempting to folks to take them and put them on, again, those low-value vehicles and drive around. And you can just go ahead and swipe them, because there's lots and lots of temporary registrations out there.
Oh, but I guess if you follow that logic, then we should make the license plate be inside the car as well.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mabry, you're right. I mean, I totally understand what you're saying. We just think that, again, when we look at it, we don't believe the system's broke, and we don't see this as a solution.
Okay. Any other questions?
I just have
Representative
a quick comment. I just want to apologize for everybody for my earlier questioning and following all the rules. But I guess as I sit here, I decide that I really need to start thinking more like a dishonest person than an honest person. It's just amazing to me what people will try to do to get through around.
We already envision you.
You've got Representative Zana here to think that way.
Oh, okay. I don't need to, I guess.
Sir, can I ask one question?
Certainly.
There isn't anything now that stops a dealer from putting Cliff Zana or DeSoto in those plate areas front and back now, is there?
Chair Brown, Representative Greenlech. No, there's nothing at this time. When they issue the temporary registration, that is technically the plate area that they would be issuing with that form. Whether there's plates on the car or not, they can take those original plates off and put whatever advertising they want there, plus their logo license plate frame that you see on many vehicles. Many of the newer cars, I think Ron Tonkin is probably famous for it, have basically a placard in both license plate areas that say Ron Tonkin Chevrolet, when you have it temporary up in the window at the same time.
Right.
Thank you, folks, for your testimony this morning.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I'll close the public hearing on 2541. And Janet, do we have anything else? No. And hearing nothing else to add, we are adjourned.